In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And welcome, everybody. This is episode 40 of the Energemetra 6 podcast, and we are currently on the epilogue and conclusion to Veil of Mysteries. And today we have Mel, and second and third, and so this is our last episode for the Veil of Mysteries. I'll say a few words after we're done. I have one more thought, one more idea that I want to sort of throw out there, but this is our last live episode for the foreseeable, because I do not have the next book finished yet. I am working on it, but we're not there yet. So thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Mel. It's you know, you have been here every single time, pretty much, for the past year, and it's just a huge blessing, and I just appreciate it. I want everybody to know how much I appreciate that you have been so faithful to do this with me. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, let's hit our V for VAD, and we can get going. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. And this is the Veil of Mysteries, conclusion, Streaks of Light. Interval. Again, he fought through the slough of his own consciousness, desperately trying to escape the morass. Again, with sustained effort, he managed to fight free. This dream was different from the others. It hurt. The pain was all around him, drilling into his skull, swamping all other sensation except the cold. It was so cold. It was the same darkness he found himself in any other time he slept, but this time was different. When he saw the boy against the wall, there was none of the normal confusion or familiarity. Instead, he simply knew. It was himself. It had always been him. He had always been this. There was nothing but this inside him where the pain lived. He was the little boy, cowering by the wall, unable to face the world, unable to function, wretched and broken, driven so hard by the clamor and judgment constantly leveled at him that he was left with no recourse other than to hurt himself to drown it out. No one could see him now, but the shame still burned. No one could hear, but he could hear himself. Feel himself crying out for help. What help was there for one such as him, who could not help himself? His cry echoed out into the terrible nothingness that was himself. And there was an answer. He didn't open his eyes, but he could see, or he thought he could see. There was light shining from everything and nothing. He knew who he was, could remember what had happened. Everything that had happened. The book, the room, Adrian and his aching head. He remembered coming to Aurora, meeting each of his friends one by one. He relived it all, felt the emotions, experienced the friendships so rapidly that when he was done, it felt as if he were spinning. Then came his final failure. Even in Aurora, where he wasn't a helpless child, he had failed the friends who had followed him. Was this what it was like to die? He stood on a sheet of sheer crystal, so bedazzled by the light that came from all around now that he couldn't see anything beyond the floor beneath him. There was no world, only the light and the crystal beneath his feet, and the perfect awareness of the wretchedness that was himself. The grinding weight of his failures and his unbearable weakness, his worthlessness. Then the light, or whatever unfathomable majesty must be the source of such a light, spoke. "I made you." He didn't answer, couldn't answer, but seeing his broken life, he could feel, and what he felt was bewilderment and rejection. He was 12 years old, and he couldn't tie his shoe or use the toilet properly. He couldn't feed himself or even talk, not really. Even in Aurora, where he was whole, he failed. The Watcher was right. Its accusations struck him to the core. What reason could there be for one such as him? The speaker must have known his incredulity, because he spoke again, his voice so deep it would have shaken the world to pieces if there had been a world to shake. "Seek nothing from a liar but lies. I made you. Your value is mine to set." Confusion and anguish filled him, but there was a quality to this voice that he couldn't disbelieve. It was certainty and authority incarnate. Still, he knew that accepting this reality was his choice. He could just as easily turn away and return to all that he had ever known. Nate remembered Lyssa then. When he offered her the amulet, she hadn't believed he would make such an offer. The same hunger he'd seen in her eyes filled him now, to overflowing. But what was Aurora? Was it a dream? What of his failure? "Failure is how you learn. I set your light before the worlds. I know your purpose." The voice was not hostile, but there was a terrible weight to it, pressing into him with its certainty. The darkness that gripped him began to loosen as he accepted what he heard. That quickly, he saw the lies that had clung to him for what they were. They had been impressed upon him from the outside, ingrained in him with each lash he had taken upon his soul from a time before he even had memory. Accepting those lies, making them core to his identity, it cost him so much. There was no question in his mind as to whether he was dreaming now. This voice was real. Its authority was unquestionable. This place was real. Aurora, his friends, his failures, were they real? What about home? Dad? Adrian? Were they real? Was he real? The voice was gentler this time. "Even this is but a shadow of what you will see one day." Doubt was beyond him in that moment. Lightmaker. What now? "Now?" The voice carried a smile. "Now wake up and save them." Epilogue. Nate did wake up. driven by the knowledge that his friends must be dying. He dragged himself out of a crater in the floor and stumbled onto the bridge, then checked each of them in turn. Somehow they were all alive. John and Shauna were even still conscious. John was kneeling next to Amy, who had driven herself to the ragged edge of death yet again. John was struggling to heal her, despite being half dead himself, obviously unable to focus, tears running down his face in desperation. Nate gently nudged John aside and dug deep in himself to find the reserves he needed. Then he healed both Amy and John in turn, restoring their bodies and leaving them with nothing more than simple fatigue. After Nate had finished with him, John slumped next to Amy, watching helplessly as Nate proceeded to heal the others. Andrew and Rachel had pushed themselves almost as hard. Hard enough that at first Nate thought Andrew really was dead. Like Ralph, Nate found damage in Andrew's cells that was too old to heal, obviously from his first bout of entropic shock. The vast majority, however, was current, and Andrew's body still recognized what it meant to be whole. As he finished healing him, Nate poked Andrew, who was stirring a bit, and grumbled, "I don't want to hear anything more about you being a coward. You got it?" Andrew grinned sheepishly and nodded, then fell instantly asleep. Shauna was the only one other than John who was awake enough to be coherent. She looked exhausted and ready to cry, but she was still at her console, peering blearily into the dust ahead of them. When Nate finally reached her, Shauna gave him a brief, grateful look. Taking his hands away, Nate smiled at her and said, "Thank you, Shauna." She returned his smile with a weary one of her own, but she was as focused on her task as he was on his. Somehow he managed to restore each of the others, one by one. Ty was the last, and when he finished, Nate collapsed against the wall, his hand resting on Ty's shoulder. Sleep took him while he stood there, leaning against the wall, and he slumped to the floor and once more into darkness. It took a full month to escape the abyss, newly covered by the veil of mysteries. The veil was even thicker than it had been before, and they had to reduce their speed even further than when they first visited Sanctuary to compensate. Andrew, Shannon, and Shauna collectively decided that 2 seconds was their minimum safety margin if they were to approach anything with significant gravity, and that meant reducing their speed to a tiny fraction of the power they had available. From the beginning, Kevin questioned whether they'd even make it out, to the point where he finally drove Shannon to pull her amulet off her neck and hang it from her hand. It fell toward the ceiling, as did all the others when tested, confirming that they still had a means to find the center of the veil, even now. Shannon recreated her navigation system, using a point on the back wall as a target. What was left of it after Nate had crashed through from the passage beyond when he turned himself into a human power conduit. The navigation aid was necessary. Gravity twisted and warped so strongly that Nate was certain without it they never would have escaped from the dust at all. The horrible presence that had watched them as they entered the abyss was barely noticeable with the veil in place, and after the first 3 days it faded away entirely. Whether because it was searching blindly for them in the murk or simply losing interest, they had no way to tell. Unsurprisingly, they never encountered another one of the enemy's vessels, either. Space was vast, and when you couldn't see your hand in front of your proverbial face, suffice to say, none of them were sorry to miss out on such an encounter. As far as any of the friends were concerned, any change Nate hadn't barbecued when he lost control of his power could wander the newly restored veil forever, or fall into a gravity well, and they wouldn't shed a tear. 2 hours before they actually broke out, Shauna excitedly told them via shipwide comm that particle density was down to half what it had been for the last few weeks. They all gathered then, watching as the dust ahead gradually thinned from a muddy, impenetrable soup to a point where they could vaguely see the bright spots that marked the stars beyond its edge. Ty grinned at Nate as the stars grew brighter.
So what we gonna do first when we get out?
Nate's mouth quirked, and he said, We're going to get Laura and Jesse and Lissa. You know that.
Yeah, I know.
Ty's grin was completely unapologetic.
I'm just glad to be out of here.
His grin widened, and he gave Nate a mischievous look.
And I'm looking forward to see Nate blast some changed.
Rachel frowned.
You know, before we left Earth, there weren't many changed. We only ever saw one or two. That was terrifying enough. How can there be so many now?
She shook her head, then after a moment, as if to preserve the lighthearted mood, flashed a grin of her own at Ty.
I can't wait to be back on a planet again either, even if we do have change to worry about.
Same, Kevin said with a twirl of his UPT. I'm just glad we didn't meet any of those void-eating ships in the middle of this soup. Though after what Nate did, it'd be a miracle if any of them survived. He shot a glare Nate's way. You could have done that before, you know. Maybe saved us all some pain? Nate snorted. You wanted me to turn us into the biggest light bulb in the history of the universe on purpose? Kevin's eyebrows climbed his forehead. Hey, it worked, didn't it? Amy smirked from her place by the hatch, her fingers twisting around the cylindrical stack of disks they'd found on Hope One, her eyes probing for its secrets. Shauna must have increased their speed then, because they burst from the veil all at once, finally, into the vast black expanse of space beyond. There was a collective intake of breath across the bridge as the heavens opened and they were free once more. It was Travis who let out the first imprecation, but Andrew was right behind him. Nate looked questioningly at them, his eyebrows raised, and Travis merely pointed mutely to a spot almost beyond the edge of Adamant's main window, where a dozen streaks of light, like shooting stars, blasted away from the veil into the free space of the Aurora Galaxy. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And that ends The Veil of Mysteries by me, Jared Michaud. I will be reading the excerpt of the next book, tentatively titled Against the Odds, The Epimyth, Book 3. Real quick before I do that, Mel, I have a question. When you first read that epilogue, did you get what the streaks of light were about?
I don't think I did, actually.
Okay, I was wondering. In the interval that comes before part three, mm-hmm. or was it part two, what you see is you see streaks of light showing the paths of enemy ships.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure whether I buried that too much or not, but either way, little bit of a fun point that I suppose our listeners will get that not yeah. everybody will. Okay, this is an excerpt from Against the Odds, The Epimyth, Book 3. Adamant charged like a mother grizzly to the rescue of her captured cubs. They broke atmosphere at a speed that had Andrew and Shannon Logan literally white-knuckling the arms of their control stations. Their sister, Shauna, at the helm, was all focus, her gaze locked on her instruments as they streaked toward the ground so fast that a simple surrender to gravity would have been a relief. Behind them, Nate, whom many called Bright Star, only had a tiny sliver of his attention on the ground ahead and below. Mostly his focus was in an entirely different realm, the energy fields that underlay the world. If he registered their terrible speed and the seemingly inevitable collision with the planet below, he trusted his friends implicitly, and Shauna was the best of them at the helm. His responsibility was to defend against the possibility of an Energemetra 6 attack coming from them at light speed from the planet's surface. When the Change destroyer awaiting them on the surface of Solus below had crashed nearly a month before, Adamant only survived the debris thrown up by its impact due to the same sort of Energemetra 6 shield Nate was currently maintaining around them. Now what he was concerned about was that the destroyer might still have functional weapon systems, or that the enemy might have gained control of the planet's native defenses, whatever they were. Once Adamant was on the ground, space defenses would be unable to fire on them, but until then, Lightmaker only knew what might come up out of the gravity well and try to vaporize them. Unlike the last time he held such a shield, most of Nate's friends were now with him, sharing the burden. Even if the enemy vessel still had the capability to strike at them, together they could hold a shield against many times the firepower a single destroyer could throw. They had done exactly that on their insane run through the enemy's entire armada a month before. Then Nate had been alone, maintaining the shield on his own, until their second battle with the enemy armada in the Abyss, sharing the shield in such a way was a feat none of them had known was possible. It was yet another lesson Nate had taught them by simply doing what seemed instinctively right to him, breaking all bounds of traditional understanding. Now, however, as the seconds, then minutes, ticked by, no wave of energy reached up from the ground to smite them. The curvature of the planet was starting to disappear beyond the edge of the bridge's great window, and they could actually see the tiny dot of the city below when Rachel Cassizia snorted aloud.
Well, so much for a hot landing. Do you think the Telestics were able to...
She was cut off by a voice coming through the bridge speaker system. Adamant? Adamant? Is that Adamant? What are you doing? They'll see you! They all looked at each other in surprise, their attention pulled partially away from the shield they were maintaining, and Nate saw Shauna doing something on her console that immediately started the ship rotating until the great bridge window was pointed toward the sky instead of the ground. It was a bit earlier than she had planned, Nate could tell, but he thought it was probably the right move. After a moment, Andrew spoke.
Is this Solus Control? We've come to help. Can you elaborate?
The snort that came back to him was somewhere between exasperated and derisive. You're a bit late for that. Best just get out of here while you can. We've had two other vessels sneak out in the last week. So far, they've left us alone here, mostly. Now, though, there's no way they can miss you. That re-entry has to be visible to half the hemisphere. Andrew looked around at Nate ruefully.
So, what now?
Nate frowned and shook his head, thinking. Well, we're not leaving, that's for sure. He glanced over at Shauna. You can probably ease up on the landing, as much as you can. She grunted in response, and the inertial damping that came along with Adamant's deep space retin drive finally cut out, deceleration pressing them back into their seats as if with a giant hand trying to crush them. Further speech was impossible, and they all simply endured the rest of the descent. When the pressure finally eased and the motion stopped, they breathed a collective sigh. Flipping his universal positioning tool back and forth in his fingers, Kevin Radding grinned. We made it down, anyway. Before any of them could reply, Solus Control's voice came back over the bridge's comm system. Adamant, you ought to know you're going to have guests. There are a lot of people trying to get off the planet any way they can. As if to illustrate the point, Andrew gestured toward the main window, where they could already see people running toward them across the spaceport's reinforced concrete landing field. He frowned.
That doesn't seem good.
Nate smiled grimly. It certainly tells us something about what's going on down here. I think maybe we'd better go meet them. Andrew's sister Shannon gave him a sharp look, as did Rachel Kasizia. Rachel said,
"You really think that's safe?"
Amy Miles laughed from her seat next to Travis Retton.
"Since Travis and I crash landed, we've rocketed right through a changed flotilla head first. Spent a week leading them into the middle of the most dangerous hole in space anybody's ever seen. Then run back into the middle of them, all while the watcher who made that hole dangerous was trying to crawl into our heads. I mean, that almost makes flying through the middle of the densest cloud of dust ever seen in space to escape again seem pretty tame in comparison. You really think talking to a few scared groundies is going to stop him?"
Tyler Ty Wrighton snorted half in amusement and half in disgust.
"At least they don't have an airlock to throw him out of down here. You should have seen what happened on Lighthouse Station."
Ty smirked as Rachel's frown darkened and her brother John put a restraining hand on her arm.
"Exactly."
Rachel gazed flatly at Nate. Nate returned her glare with a crooked grin. "I'm not here to be safe. Surely that's obvious by now. Let's get moving." He suited words to action by unfastening the restraints that held him in his seat and rising to lead the way out of Adamant's bridge and down the corridor toward the airlock. As usual when Adamant was landed, the vessel remained suspended on an invisible cushion of force. When Nate opened the airlock and started extending the ship's ramp to the ground, he found the crowd below practically ready to storm the ship, reaching to catch the ramp even before it hit the ground. A few eyed the hovering vessel with wonder or trepidation, but most seemed desperate to board, presumably to escape Solace. As the ramp dropped, Nate stepped to open the outer door of the ship's airlock and stared out over the gathered throng. Except for those under the ramp and out of view, the crowd actually hesitated when they saw Nate's face. One of them called out,
"Oi, ain't that the Bright Star?"
Nate had known that his time spent speaking in the conclaves at Bounty City and later Solace had given him some measure of fame, especially after Adjutant Celedris was deposed. But these people had been frantic just a moment ago. Did he really have that much influence? A moment later, the question became moot. Across from Adamant, between two other parked vessels, three grotesque, hulking figures appeared. In the daylight, at a distance, the changed were somehow even more hideous and disfigured than Nate remembered when he first faced the one that attacked them before. Far worse than the sight of them was the sense of dread that rolled across the field like a physical shockwave. Nate actually watched the crowd shudder as it curled over them and pressed them down. When it reached him, he actually gasped aloud, echoed by his friends. Despair assaulted him, instantly recalling the most pressing darkness he had ever fought to the forefront of his consciousness. When Nate first met Andrew Shannon and Shauna Logan, they had found Adamant's sister ship, Resolute, crashed inside the behemoth, the giant hulk of a world ship long abandoned above the Planetaria. At the time, he'd fought a changed in the vacuum of space, deep in the bowels of the crashed Resolute. That fight had been eerie and dreadful, but it had never occurred to Nate at the time that his dread might have been caused directly by the changed itself. Now, the psychological assault that blasted everyone in range as they moved into position was unmistakable. One by one, Nate's encounters with the enemy played back through his head, beginning at Resolute, snapping to Sanctuary, where he'd seen Elder Rebus' eyes grow vertical slits, and the enemy had spoken to him, then moving to Adjutant Celedris here on Solace, and finally playing back through the agonizing ordeal they had endured on their trip into the Abyss. Simultaneously, Nate felt his other world and his real, damaged self attempting to forcibly intrude on him once more. He gritted his teeth as it pulled him under for a long moment and his consciousness drowned in horror. Then, through the darkness, he caught a hint of the light that he had encountered in that darkest moment when he thought he had failed his friends. It was only a memory, but it was enough. Grinding his teeth, Nate pulled himself into the present. Despair still pressed down on him so hard that all he could do was focus on what must be their next objective. The change still lurching toward Adamant. In the atmosphere of a planet, without the intervening environment suit and the unreality of null gravity, these changed were somehow an even more obvious perversion of what a human should be. Their features were distorted and swollen, as if normal human beings had been inflated with compressed air, until their features were twice as massive as they should have been, but not evenly or well. Bulbous noses and jowls hung from bloated heads stuck on stumpy necks. Slit-pupiled eyes bugged from sockets that were too small to hold them, their whites blood red. The way each changed had been deformed was different, as if whatever had filled up their bodies had simply been pumped in and allowed to derange their flesh, however it would. They were moving startlingly fast for such misshapen creatures, lumbering across the field toward the back of the now silent crowd that had gathered around Adamant. A few of the people in their path glanced around, warned by some sound or sense. Their panic was instant, spreading rapidly as those around them realized something had caught their attention and turned to look themselves. Nate let out a muffled imprecation under his breath and immediately reached for Energemetra 6. It came almost instantaneously now, after the practice of the past few months. His senses opened to the fields, he saw the world around him in shocking color and detail. Bands of energy flowed around every material object he could sense. The colors were vivid, in ways he had never experienced before. And he always thought he could see colors that had no place in the visual spectrum, though his brain didn't seem to want to interpret them properly. Even in circumstances like this, it never failed to amaze him how much information he could gather on the world, all at once through the fields. He could tell exactly how fast the changed were moving, and how quickly they would reach the back of the crowd, now flowing away to spill around Adamant, fleeing from the horrors that threatened them. Nate caught a flash of a change reaching out to grasp one of the slower members of the crowd and fling him to the ground. But no, the monsters were still at least a few seconds away. Was he imagining things now? He shook his head and focused, forming a shield like the one he'd used to protect Adamant from the energy discharges of the changed fleet and the strange chunks of matter they created. Nate pushed the shield outward and back to surround his friends, anchoring it to himself, even though it was centered behind him. "Stay behind me," Nate called over his shoulder. Turning back to the crowd, Nate saw the changed finally reach its rearmost rank, and the scene he'd caught what he thought was an imaginary glimpse of a moment before, of the changed reaching out to slam a man to the ground, played itself out in reality. The act was brutal enough to be shocking, but the real shock was the fact that he'd seen it before it happened. Had that been precognition? Nothing like it had ever happened to him before. He'd had occasional moments when his uncooperative, inaccessible memory crystallized, and he saw his situation and his future with startling clarity before everything went fuzzy, leaving him wondering what he'd ever been so certain about. This was different, but there was no time to ponder it. One member of the crowd rebounded off Nate's shield, having tried to rush the ramp, obviously thinking his momentum and size would be enough to force him past what were, after all, only children. Then Nate was pushing forward bodily through the crowd, using his shield to make a path through the press as the changed grabbed two more screaming people, hurling them brutally across the concrete. Most of Nate's friends followed him, though he saw Shauna hanging back at Adamant's ramp, already fending off one attempted boarder with her own version of his Energemetra 6 shield and a truly ferocious scowl. It was just as well she'd stayed behind. Her agoraphobia wouldn't do her any favors here. As they moved through the crowd, Nate's friends began to spread out, moving out from under his shield. A single glance back showed him that they were all surrounded by their own mostly transparent bubbles of force, and he relaxed, withdrawing his shield until it rested close around him. The larger it was, the more mental focus it took for him to maintain it. And withdrawing it until it surrounded only his body allowed him to give that much more attention to the monsters before him. The crowd had managed to clear the way between Nate's party and the Changed, fleeing to either side and around Adamant, most never looking back. As Nate watched, the middle Changed, the only one of the three that had an arm ending in a giant weapon, smashed the end of its gun into a woman's head, dropping her to the pavement. The field was littered with the mostly still forms of those too slow or unlucky to dodge the monsters, scattered behind them in gruesome trails. The creatures themselves had spread out somewhat as they pursued the fleeing crowd, and were now facing Nate and the others, their twisted forms still.
"Who are you?"
The voice was guttural and deep, as if echoing from inside some strange cavern, instead of coming from a living creature's throat. Of the three monsters, it was the middle one that had spoken, its gaze fixed on Nate through eyes that were unable to quite focus because of its bloated face. Nate cocked his head, surprised. The other monster he faced never tried to speak, though now that he thought about it, the vacuum had made that impossible, even if it wanted to do so. "I'm Nate." He turned his gaze to each of the monstrosities in turn, then glanced to either side at his friends. Most of them seemed tense but calm, and their shields were solid. When he first grasped Energemetris VI, habit had led him to instinctively reach through the Sigil of Mysteries, the amulet given to him by Terran Galton, the Keeper of the Mysteries. The Sigil amplified any Energemetris VI use that flowed through it, as did the amulets held by Nate's friends. Their amulets had been found on Hope One, the vessel that originally brought humanity to the Aurora Galaxy, later used by Paul Kasizia as a headquarters and repository when he began creating Energemetris VI artifacts. Nate could tell his friends were using their amulets as well. They were all glowing from their places around his friends' necks. He imagined his own was just as bright.
"Nate, you should not have come here."
The monster's gloating certainty made Nate grit his teeth. Either the creatures had sized Nate and his friends up to their satisfaction, or the words had acted as some kind of signal, because two of the three creatures charged, while the third raised the weapon that made up the end of its arm. Then the weapon was belching a stream of red energy that must have had both an Energemetris VI and a mundane component. Still striding purposefully forward, Nate caught a glimpse of the shimmering air around the plume of plasma. Then the energy impacted his shield. The effect was nothing like he expected. When Nate and the others had fought their way through the enemy armada, both leaving Solace and in the Abyss itself, the power of the enemy's attacks depleted his shield at a rate that left him scrambling to re-energize, or even, at times, completely rebuild them. Compared to those tremendous blows, this attack was like being hit with a feather. The shield he had prepared to receive the attack was so much more powerful than the force the enemy exerted against it, he didn't even register the hit. Except as a physical blow that literally knocked him onto his butt, leaving him blinking in surprise. Nate started to stand up, but then the secondary effects of the hit reached him. It was as if the air had caught fire, and Nate realized he hadn't thought to protect his air supply at all. Muttering a curse under his breath, Nate reached back down to put his hand against the concrete and concentrated, creating a blast of fresh air around him while adding an air retention layer to his shield. As he picked up his hand, he felt the prickling of the Recomocula on his neck and shoulder, telling him that it was trying to protect him from overusing Energemetris VI. Unlike his friends and other Energemetrists, any time Nate drew on that power, he externalized the resulting negative entropic energy his efforts generated. For most, that energy simply escaped into their bodies. His body rejected the energy, pushing it out into the environment around him instead. Rising again, Nate noted the telltale handprint in the concrete left behind by his extropy, but it was only a passing glimpse. Nate pushed himself to a standing position, watching the smirk slide from the face of the monster in front of him as it realized how badly its attack had failed. Another massive blast of plasma and raw power followed almost instantly, but Nate was ready this time, and the comparatively small kinetic portion of the blast, which had knocked him down before, was redirected around him with the rest of the blast wave. Nate started to step forward, but looking down, he realized that the concrete in front of him was so hot it was actually glowing. Nate snorted. Dealing with this kind of energy on a planet's surface was way more complicated than fighting in space. From his left, Nate heard Andrew call,
"Hey, Nate, what should we do with this thing?"
Nate glanced over toward Andrew to see Travis hunched over in front of the monster, his hands on his head as it pummeled his shield from above, as if it were trying to drive him into the ground like a human fence post, while Andrew blasted its shield with gray energy. Kevin, Ty, and Amy were spaced around the creature in a half circle, each doing something different with Energemetra 6, presumably attempting to overcome it. "For starters, try not to get killed," Nate called back, glancing to his right to see John flying across the parking lot to land in a heap, while Rachel and Shannon lashed out at the creature on that side with their own blasts of energy. "Just keep them busy." A tremendous wave of heat and electricity washed over them, and Nate looked back up to see one of the space vessels behind the Changed engulfed in flames, toppling away from them as Ty stared at it, his mouth gaping. The others had stopped to stare at Ty, and Nate called out, "And try not to destroy anything important." Lightmaker knew that between them all, the amount of energy they had to draw on was so vast they could easily rip the city apart. "Do you want us to kill it?" The question came from Kevin this time, but Nate's gaze was again fixed on the creature in front of him, and he was too busy preparing for an attack of his own to answer. A moment later, Shannon's holler alleviated his need to do so.
"What if the Shade escapes? We need Nate."
There was some sort of response, but Nate was finally ready, and he unleashed a blast of his own toward the target in front of him. As before, the energy sparkled off some sort of shield surrounding the creature for a long moment. But Nate had been prepared, and with the aid of his amulet, the effort required to sustain the burst was minor. Then the monster screeched its torment as the power eroded its shield and pulsed into its body, making it writhe in uncontrollable agony. Nate's instinct was to do exactly as he'd done aboard Resolute, and destroy the creatures one by one. But as he raised his hand in preparation for letting loose another blast of power, the creature turned its head up from the ground toward him. Nate wasn't exactly sure what clue he caught, whether it was something in the creature's eyes or its body language, but it made him hesitate. He muttered an imprecation and looked down at the ground in front of him, which was doubtless still far too hot to walk on. After a moment's thought, he blanketed the ground in a thin layer of power, some strange combination of blue and gray that he knew would work for the purpose. Then he was walking forward toward the monster that still lay 100 feet in front of him. A deep, low moan emanated from it, and as Nate drew near, the creature turned weakly, half on its side, to look up and sideways at him. Those eyes were full of pain, but without a trace of the rage or hatred they'd held barely a moment before.
"Kill me,"
it rasped, in a voice that, unlike its previous incarnation, could almost have been human. Surprised, Nate inhaled sharply, realizing what he was actually looking at. He had disrupted the Shade's hold on the body. That was a human being talking to him. Then the creature roared, and whatever Nate had seen in its eyes was gone as fast as it had appeared. The massive body flipped over, swinging its gun arm in a huge arc to smack into Nate's head. If Nate hadn't incorporated a small amount of blue Energemetra 6 into his shield to dump kinetic effects, the blow would have crushed him to paste. As it was, his body shuddered with the impact, but a sympathetic wave of power blasted out of Nate's shield and back up the creature's arm to send it rolling across the concrete. Nate followed, wondering how he could kill the monster in good conscience if there was a person still alive inside it. Could there be some other way? Nate stared down at the creature once more. Now it was struggling to untangle its limbs, while simultaneously trying to rise once again. There were times when Nate wished he had more actual training and experience using Energemetra 6. Often, his natural understanding of patterns led him to do things that most Energemetrists would have said were impossible. His use of Energemetra 6 was based on an instinctive understanding of how the energy field worked. It was as if the autism he battled in that other world, a world which now felt more like a nightmare than reality, supercharged his abilities here. There were times like this one, though, when he would have given almost anything to have spent the same years of study and experimentation that some of his friends had in learning to use their own power. And that ends the excerpt of Against the Odds, Book 3 of the Epimyth. Thank you, everybody, for being here. I really appreciate it. And there are a couple of quick notes before we head out here. I just want to say again, thank you to all the listeners. It has been totally fun doing this. Thank you, Second. Thank you, Third. Thank you, Mel, so much for being here basically for a year with me doing this. And thank you to everybody who isn't here today as well. Thank you to Oldest and to Luke and PJ. And, you know, I know there are a number of people who have helped us out, and I appreciate every single person. Couple of quick notes. First off, this will be our last live recording for the foreseeable future. If I do more, which I plan to do Path of the Talonwood as soon as I get a chance, it is just about done. I will do it as a recording instead of as a live, and we'll release it. So do stay tuned. There will be more episodes, even if it isn't live ones. Before I get on to the final one, did you have any thoughts, Mel? Anything you wanted to say?
No, I just really appreciate being here. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. So my final thought is this, and I would love your feedback, Mel, and if we do have anybody in the live chat, I would love to hear from them as well, or Second or Third, you'd be welcome to say. Normally, when I write a book, I read it aloud as the final step before finishing the manuscript, because it gives me a chance to hear what it is I've written, because at that point, I can't hear it, I can't see it on the page anymore. I was considering doing a live reading of Path of the Talonwood in its finished form that is only live. So if anybody wanted to tune in, they could, but they wouldn't be able to get the recording later necessarily, and then do the actual recorded version later. I'm wondering if that's a good idea or not. So if anybody wants to chime in on that, you know, feel free to email me. What do you think, Mel?
Yeah, I think that could be cool. Curious to see what other people think, too.
You there?
Oh, is it cutting out? Oh,
there we go. No, you're good now.
Yeah, I said I think that could be really cool. I'm curious to see what other people think, too.
Okay. Well, we will see. If we do that, it will go out on my email list. And I'm not sure when it would be exactly, so stay tuned. If you're not on my email list, go to e6universe.com and join the email list. You get the full text of all the books, and you get updates when I'm doing stuff. So if that does interest you, go sign up there and check it out. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate you. We will catch you all next time, whenever that happens to be.